Paul Jones here with an hour of rhythm and blues, and it's an hour devoted to Jack Bruce. He's here in person with a seven-piece band, including him, and they're in session tonight. Also, a bit later on, we'll be talking to Jack, and we kick off with Never Tell Your Mother She's Out of Tune. Jack Bruce, thank you very much for being here at all. And thank you for playing wonderfully.
Well.
And it's just generally lovely to see you again.
It's really nice to see you, and I'm so happy that you're having me, as it were.
Yeah. Well, what a band.
It was my big blues band, if you like. Yeah.
Normally led by Tony Remy.
Yes.
When I say normally, I mean when you're not there.
When I'm not there, it's normally Tony Remy, and Paddy Milner plays piano and sings.
Frank Tonto on drums, Tony Remy on guitar, of course, and yes. Paddy Milner on keyboards, both Hammond organ and piano, where heard.
That's it, yeah.
Horn section, Winston Rollins on trombone.
Winston Rollins on trombone, and there's actually quite a floating, you know, they're not always the same people. So let's just say the Winston Rollins horn section.
Oh, right, okay. Which on this program is Paul Newton on trumpet, yes, and Derek Nash on saxes.
That's correct. And those are the real guys. But being a horn player, sometimes you look at them and say, I don't actually know who you are. But you sound good.
You have that kind of thing. I thought Jack Bruce was always in such control of everything that you knew exactly who everyone was.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. No, I mean, well, you know, they dip it in depths. You know, we got this. Well, you know, it's a kind of floating horn section, but not really. No, those are the guys. Those are the guys.
You've written out for these songs some new horn things.
Yeah, there's some of the, I have a record which has just come out, although it was recorded about 8 or 9 years ago, at least, called Live at the Milky Way, and that's with my Latin band. I've got all these different bands, it's very confusing. Sorry, folks.
It's confusing, but wonderful.
It's wonderful, yeah. And that was a live concert that we did at the Milky Way in Amsterdam. We're doing some of the same songs, but with added horns, because that was percussion and this is horns.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
It does. Well, in as much as, you know, if you think that the basic unit is usually something like guitar, bass, drums.
Yes. Well, I mean, I do play it in trios occasionally too, still, but I do like a big band, you know. I like, sometimes we even have, as another bass player, there's the bass player in the band, Nick Cohen. He actually plays the bass, and I get to play the piano.
Yes.
So it's fun, too.
On tonight, it's just the bass for you.
And, tonight, yeah. Yes. Just the bass for you, yes. Okay.
How do you pronounce the name of the band that plays on Live at the Milky Way?
Oh, the Cuicoland Express.
Cuicoland Express. And tell me where that name comes from.
Cuicoland, when I was in Chile one time, I found out that that's the local name in Chile for those sort of walled, guarded enclaves where rich people live. The poor people call it, they're living in Cuicoland.
It's all very well as long as you don't have to be one of the people outside.
Yes, yeah, that kind of a thing. So that was the name. I thought, I've got to call it that.
Right, and on that album, we might as well just briefly talk about that album some more. You've got Vernon Reid on guitar.
Vernon Reid on guitar. Bernie Worrell on, the great Bernie Worrell, my brother, on Hammond organ. El Negro Horacio Hernandez on drums, Robbie Amin on drums, and Richie Flores on percussion.
Great.
Did I leave anybody out? No, I think
it's like, and it's amazing, actually, when you come to the 5-4 section at the beginning of White Room, it's really quite confusing to start with,
yeah,
because the Latin stuff is all playing across the five.
Right.
Well,
what it sounds like, really, it sounds very African, that 5-4, because they do play it in, you know, but they call, that's actually, when I started playing 5-4 with the Latin guys, like years ago when I introduced, when I was, started to play with those guys in New York, they actually called it a jack. That became, that rhythm, that 5, it's got my name on it, you know.
Yeah. Boom, boom,
well, just that, for playing that kind of 5, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know. That's good. Okay, we play a check. You know, yak. No, that's it. Yak.
Yak love rules.
Yak.
Well, look, let's talk about these individual things. Never tell your mother she's out of tune. It sounds more bluesy in your current sort of version.
Yeah, it's not quite as Bartokian as it was originally.
Oh, now Bartok, you would point the finger at, would you? For this?
Well, it's just that the horn rhythm to me. That, I'm sure that's Bartok. It's like Bartok, is it? It's like a mirror of itself. So, yeah, but it does sound more bluesy. You're right, which is a good thing.
Yeah. Well, it's nice to hear you say it's a good thing, because that's where I'm coming from.
Yeah,
but I mean,
me too.
Are you in any sense returning to a distant past breaking new ground? I don't know.
I think I'm doing both. going backwards and staying still and moving forward all at the same time. Very uncomfortable, but it's what you got to do, I think. What I've got to do. I love it. I also love the title of that, which was from a real life event. Chris Spedding, the guitar player, his mum, used to sing in a choir. And he went to listen to her, and he actually said to his mum that she was singing out of tune, and it created quite a big problem for her, I think. He didn't get his dinner or something, you know.
And then there's This Anger. Well, This Anger's a Liar.
This Anger's a Liar, which is a song. The lyrics are by my old mate, Kip Hanrahan, who's the person that introduced me to all the Latin music that I got involved in for many years. And he produced the album. And also wrote those lyrics. His method of writing lyrics in New York is to go out and walk around the block. And he has nothing, and he comes back. When he comes back, he's got a lyric. And usually quite interesting.
when you sing Kip's lyrics, I mean, are they completely new? They're like, you know, so how difficult or easy is it to sing them as if they're yours?
Well, with Pete Brown, we actually quite often sit down and work on the lyrics together, you know, because it's just the way we often did it. Not always, but quite often. With Kip, he gives me something and it's more or less there. It's a New York vibe to it, you know, and I quite like that for some different kinds of songs. Pete, I would say, is a real poet. He won't thank me for saying that, but he is. And there's a lot of many, many depths of meaning in his lyrics. But I think with Kip, it's what you read is what you get, basically. It's very hard-edged New York, and I like that.
So you can step into one of those songs and completely sort of wear it like it's yours.
Definitely. Because I know exactly what he means, even if he's not singing about me or, you know, or emotions that I might have. I think singing is a bit like acting anyway, isn't it? You kind of adopt certain personas.
Yes.
To do certain things.
That's right, and people shouldn't assume that every syllable is you personally.
Right. I mean, when I sing Spoonful, you know, I'm not actually planning and shooting somebody or not shooting somebody with a 45. quite often.
Quite often not planning.
not planning.
Your singing goes back to what age, roughly? Because you were discovered with a terrific voice at a very early age.
I used to be, I was a boy soprano, and my mum, she taught me a lot of Scottish songs, Robert Burns songs as well, which are Scottish songs, but, you know, folk songs and Robert Burns. And so I was singing from the year dot, really. And then I started singing competitively, probably 11, something like that. Music festivals.
And winning.
Sometimes
coming second.
Sometimes. It was this one guy who was pretty good as well. We were great rivals. So it was either him or me, you know.
I've read Harry Shapiro's book, almost all of it.
Okay.
It's pretty good, I think. It's extremely well written.
I think it's a good book. I think it's a good read. It's, you know, I enjoyed the beginning because actually a lot of stuff I didn't know about my parents.
Oh yeah,
even my grandparents. Yeah. You know, there was stuff that I'd learned because he went up to Glasgow and did a lot of research at the Caledonian University and places like that, and also through the union, the trade union that my father was a member of. So he was able to kind of get a lot of information that I didn't actually know. So it was interesting for me.
You had politics, especially from your father, well, both parents really, at a very early age.
Yes.
And it was very left-wing too. It was
extremely
communist.
Well, it was communist, no doubt about it, I was always, I think it's an emotional thing with me, the politics, it's sort of with the mother's milk, you know. It's being like being I'm a lapsed communist, put it that way, in the same sense that a lapsed Catholic is like, but you know, you don't stop being a Catholic, do you? I mean, you can sort of not practice the religion, but it's still in you, I believe. And I think the same thing applies if you're brought up with Uncle Joe Stalin, you know, as your icon, you know. And I still remember very well when Khrushchev denounced Stalin, my mother in tears. The end of civilization as we know it, or whatever. You know, so yeah, it was very, very deep stuff. I mean, my father never left the Communist Party until the day he died.
But did you not personally feel sort of slightly rarefied, as it were, you know, and sort of because of the music, especially by the time you started actually going to the Royal Scottish Academy while still at school, did you not feel sort of such a cut above your school?
Oh, no, I never felt that. What I felt when I was much younger was scared, because where I lived was pretty rough, and that was the 50s. It was the Reds under the bed thing. It was, you know, the Red Terror or whatever was going on, McCarthy. So it was late 40s, early 50s when I was growing up, and I was terrified that people would find out about my politics. So I never spoke politics around when I was very young. But then when I got to school, I became quite a firebrand in the debating society and all of that, you know, trying to get ban the bomb, you know, that sort of thing.
And presumably that sort of all floated away anyway as you got further and further into the music.
Well, yeah, I mean, but not underneath, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still basically, you know, a big lefty. You don't lose it. Like, it's still always, I still look at things through red-tinted spectacles.
Tonight you chose to sort of go back to some very early days, pre-Cream, with Neighbour Neighbour.
Yes.
Which for you goes back to Graham Bond, but I think you mentioned it's actually older than that.
It certainly is. I think it was written by Chuck Willis and performed by him, which would make it 50s or very early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
But my knowledge of it is only from Graham. To me, it sums up Graham. I just remember playing that so much. And I thought it would be lovely to do that. alone.
Neighbour, neighbour. You're on BBC Radio 2, and this is Paul Jones, and my guest is Jack Bruce. The book about you, Jack Bruce Composing Himself by Harry Shapiro, says that you moved to Essex in order to escape your drug connections.
Yes. Yeah, but in fact, what happened was
which is not Essex, it's Suffolk.
Suffolk. Sorry, Essex, yes. Suffolk. You know, yeah, that was the reason why I moved to the country, not particularly there, but that was the reason I left London, because it was getting quite difficult to live there due to that, yeah, the problems that I was having. The problems didn't go away, though, but I did a lot of driving. But it's not a period that I'm very at all proud of, deeply sorry about it, very sad about it, the waste and all of that. And so it's not something I tend to go on about, really.
Although you made some remarkable music at the time. I mean, that's...
I've prided myself on not letting it get in the way too much somehow, but obviously it did. There were times that I found it quite difficult to do things, but somehow I got through it. And then that's certainly well in the past. Many, many moons have passed since those days, thank goodness.
And nowadays you're fit. You've recovered from the transplant and all the complications that happened around that.
Well, yeah.
They put you on the wrong medication at one stage.
They did. They put me on the wrong medication and didn't really seem to realise for a while that that's what was.
I mean, that in itself was not reprehensible, but it might have been slightly reprehensible that they didn't notice that it was not working.
It took them a while. I mean, I think it's 1 in 1,000 that are allergic to this particular drug. Uh-huh. So I would have thought that if it's 1 in 1,000, that's quite a lot of people, and that it would be the first thing you would try and serve at the last. But I don't want to criticise the hospital that I went to. They were and are absolutely amazing. It's a miracle every day that I have.
And you are alive.
Yeah. Every day that I have is a blessing and a gift.
And one time they actually said, there's nothing we can do for you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's like switching the machines off time, and, you know, I'm trying to tell them not to. you can't move. It's very difficult. But, you know, yeah, it was quite an experience. And so I would highly recommend everybody to donate all of their organs after death.
Yes.
Because I think it's a fabulous and great thing and generous thing to do.
Let's get back to some songs. No, We're Going good. Wrong.
Yeah.
Is actually, that was on Disraeli Gears, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah.
It was. Yeah, I think. Yeah, it was. Yeah, yeah. That one, I remember writing that in Hampstead when I was living there. And I had a bit of a barney with my wife. So everybody thinks it's some kind of deep
political... This was
Janet.
This was Janet,
my first wife, yes.
Whom I knew as well,
of course,
at the time.
Yes,
because
So I was living in Bracknell Gardens. And had a bit of a fight, a bit of an argument. I stormed out to cool off. And as I was walking down Bracknell Gardens, the song just came in my head. The words and the music, which is a bit of a gift.
That's right.
Thanks for that, Janet.
Sorry?
Thanks very much, Janet. Yeah.
We're Going Wrong is solely you, collaborator at all.
Yes, the three words I wrote, I'm proud of that song.
Yes.
I like it, yeah. And I've done many different versions of it. And I discover a version, you know, because it's not been very vastly covered. It was an amazing version by Minnie Riperton.
Oh,
which
is
really, you know, with a huge orchestra. What they call Rotary Perception?
Connection.
Our Rotary Perception was Charles Mingus's idea of how you played time.
Yes.
But yeah, it's a great version of it. Yeah, highly recommended with her seven octave.
Of course, that first. The first phrase of what you might call the hook is almost made for her. Really,
it is. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. She did change the melody a little because I deliberately have that very strange note in it. I remember when I was recording it, Felix Pappalardi said, "You can't have that note." Yeah. And I said, "Can't I?"
In that case,
we'll see about that. But she changed it as well.
Can I go back to the sort of horns? Because all the things that you've done on this live session, they have horn parts. Now, some of them had horn parts, but some of them didn't. So have you written these out specially for this tour?
More or less, yeah. Obviously, the horn, like Never Tell Your Mother, I wrote those horn parts originally, anyway, for the Songs for a Tailor.
And that was Dick Hextall-Smith and Art Thiemann.
Art Thiemann, Harry Beckett.
John Mumford?
And John Mumford. Very good memory.
Henry Lowther.
And some things, yeah.
I think that you had Beckett and Lowther sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah.
But that had horns.
Yeah.
But Neighbor, have you done that with horns before?
Once before I did it with horns, yeah. In fact, those same guys, I got as close as I could on my 50th birthday concert.
Oh, of course. And,
it's
Cities of the Heart.
That was the first time I ever did that. So I just thought it would be nice because I was trying to find things that were relevant to my kind of, you know, my life as a musician, and that was the Graham part of it. So
yes.
I thought I'll do that.
That phrase on Neighbor made me think of Walk on the Wild Side by Jimmy Smith.
Oh, yeah.
With I think, the parts, the horns written by Oliver Nelson.
Oh, certainly Oliver Nelson, yeah.
Yes. There's just like one cadence in
right,
and I thought,
right.
Oh, yeah. I've got it. It's Jimmy Smith.
Yeah. Interesting.
But I mean, it's
the kind of the obvious horn parts, you know, that you would stick in there, you know, why not?
You mentioned your 50th birthday double album, Cities of the Heart, and that huge concert in Cologne.
Yes.
It had everybody.
It had nearly everybody. Yeah.
One of the people that it had, and also Shadows in the Air had, was Gary Moore.
Of course,
he also was BBM, Baker Bruce and Moore.
Yes.
Anything to say to us about his
departure? Well, I'm very, he was my buddy. I was playing in America when I heard the news. I arrived, I had just flown into Seattle from New York, and there was a bunch of fans at the airport, and they passed on the news. I was deeply shocked.
Yes, but it was shocking.
He was the last person that you would expect. A very robust person. You wouldn't expect him to leave us, as it were. And I'm very obviously still very broken up about it. He was going to be playing. I'm playing a concert on June the 4th at the Festival Hall. It's a combination. It's to do with the 60th anniversary of the Festival of Britain.
Oh, yes.
When they built the Festival Hall, obviously. And as part of that long celebration, they're having a guitar festival, and they've asked me to play there. I had asked Gary to be my guest. So I'm broken up about that. Joe Bonamassa is going to come, and we're going to do a tribute to Gary at the same time. So we'll play a couple of his things.
Take note, everybody.
Yes.
Jack Bruce and Joe Bonamassa. June?
The 4th.
The 4th.
The Royal Festival
Hall. Royal Festival Hall. Tribute to Gary. We're still on Disraeli gears because you have to do Sunshine of Our Love.
Yeah, yeah.
Surprise! A beautiful death and soon.
sunshine of your love.
Sunshine is, it's just part of me. I can't not do it anymore. You know, there was a time when I refused. The very first band I had, when I toured my first band in the States, 1970, I think it was, I refused to play any of those songs. And of course, people were very disappointed.
Yeah.
I thought, so what, you know? And
then
I remember going to see a Bob Dylan concert, and he didn't play anything that I really knew.
Yeah.
You know, he was going through one of his periods where he was doing sort of depression songs or something, you know, dusty dust bowl songs, and I was very disappointed. So after that, I realized that it's not fair. It's also not fair for me because I love playing those things.
Yes.
I mean, it's just. They're great things to play. So I play them. I play White Room as well, which, you know, it's lovely. Why not?
Yes. And Tony Remy taking the guitar solo. I mean, how many guitar players have played?
With me.
Including Frank Zappa.
Frank Zappa, yeah, yeah. Jimi Hendrix played Sunshine a lot. It was one of his favorite things.
And then you've got this new band.
Yes. I'm very greedy, you know.
With Vernon again.
Yes. This is called Spectrum Road.
He must be one of your all-time favorites.
Oh, he is. I love his playing, yeah.
Yeah.
He's not... For my particular songs, some people think he's not the right kind of... But for this band, it's Spectrum Road. It's a proper jazz rock band. We started off as a tribute to Tony Williams. That's how we started. 2 years ago, we played in Tokyo.
That's right. In fact, it was even billed as a Tony Williams tribute band, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yes. And we played there, and we started off playing Tony's tunes. And then now it's grown into a band in its own right, really. So it's called Spectrum Road, which was the title, or is the title, of one of Tony Williams' tracks. So it's kind of dedicated to him. And it's, as you say, Vernon Reid on guitar, John Medeski on keyboards, and he only plays old keyboards. He plays Hammond B3, clavinet, and a Mellotron, which he actually goes inside and scratches the tapes. You know, like, it's amazing what he does. He's a lunatic. Fantastic. And the drummer is Cindy Blackman Santana, as we have to now call her, since she married Carlos.
I didn't even know. When did she marry Carlos?
Couple of months ago.
Yeah, she's been Cindy Blackman for quite a while.
Yes, but now she's Cindy Blackman Santana.
Oh, wow.
With a hyphen.
Amazing. Yeah. Are you a Medeski, Martin and Wood enthusiast?
Yes, I think they're great.
Yeah. I think they're really good.
They're really
great.
Yeah. But there's another, there's a whole, I don't know, something about Spectrum Road. It's very accessible as well for that kind of music.
Great. Which perhaps Tony Williams' lifetime wasn't quite so.
No, possibly not. Possibly not. It may have been a little bit before its time, in a way.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, that was what led to a lot of the what they called fusion, which I never liked the name. I think jazz rock is a better title for that kind of music. And people always say, "Oh, it's Miles Davis who started that." But really, I would say it was Tony, in his way.
Right. And I mean, I've read in books where people say Miles Davis was unquestionably influenced by Cream.
Oh, he was, yeah. Yeah, he used to threaten his bass players that he would get me if they didn't play it right. Okay, Jack Bruce.
I think we're almost out of conversation,
focus.
but out of focus. But you've challenged me to do our collaboration from 1966.
Yes.
Why?
Because I just remember it with great affection, and I thought it was, at the time that you did it, I thought it was a very nice and brave thing to do. And I admire you very much for doing it, and I thought, why not do that? You're here, I'm here, let's do it.
It was only a B-side.
Well, so what?
It wasn't that brave. if I put it out as an A-side, it might have been.
That would have been.
Mind you, it might
that
have
would have been foolhardy.
It could have changed my whole life.
It could have.
Okay, let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it.
He's gone, he's gone.
Sonny boy is dead and gone. Yes, he's gone, he's gone. Sonny boy is dead and gone. Can't nobody, nobody play harp the way he's done. He's dead. I ain't crying, but I'm sad. Yes, he's dead, he's dead. I ain't crying, but I'm feeling sad. He made you feel good when he felt good. He made you feel bad when he felt bad. So glad that his music is going on. So glad, I'm so glad that his music is living on. Yeah, but it's so sad, the greatest one has gone.
Jack Bruce, thank you very, very, very much.
Thank you very much, Paul. It's been a great pleasure. Thank you.
And that's the end of the programme. A big thank you to Jack for being here. Absolutely tremendous. Jack Bruce, of course, on bass and vocals. Tony Remy on guitar. Frank Tonto drums. Paddy Milner at the keyboards. And Winston Rollins horns. Winston Rollins trombone. Paul Newton trumpet. And Derek Nash saxophone. Tremendous session from them. Big thank you. And next week on this program, you've got to be here at 7 o'clock next Monday. We've got King King in session.